Raised Rowdy.
All right, guys. Well, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm Nikki T.
And I'm Matt Burrell.
Yeah, thanks for co-hosting with me,
brother. Dude, no problem.
Sometimes it's Kurt's here, but oftentimes when he's not, I'll have Matt jump on to co-host with me.
Amazing.
Thankful to have you here, brother.
Yeah, happy to be here and this great guest that we've got today.
Yeah. Miss Kelsey Kulik, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Been a longtime fan, as you know. Honestly, the early days of Raised Rowdy, just a big fan of the stuff that you were doing while you were in your first stint in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And so super full circle to have you back here on the podcast.
Oh, man. You know, I feel like it's been forever since, you know, playing the round. Just last night was amazing and so exciting. I was like, oh, this is my first round being able to play. And it's been just so refreshing to be back in Nashville. But obviously to play another round again and obviously one that I'm tied to is amazing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I always talk about and you know, we were chatting a little bit before this about the revival and just the amazing event that Rob had kind of like curated and just such good talent and just good people and honestly like sonically fitting together too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We think of him when we talk about like people for our events in town as like someone that is like a benchmark for curation of, you know, what's good and what's cool and people that are just talented. So,
oh, totally. You know, I remember when I first moved to Nashville, I had like no ties to Nashville. I didn't know absolutely anyone. And Channing, who was running the round for a few months while Rob was up where he was originally from.
Yep.
That's who I met. And he's like, oh, do you want to just hop up on this stage after I just heard like these incredible co-writers that I had grew up singing the songs that they had just sung that they were like a part of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being like, not really, but yeah, okay, I guess so. And so I got up and played a few songs and then he was like, hey, we're doing like an all girls round in a month. Do you want to be a part of that? And I was like, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Haley Witters was a part of that round. Cree Harrison. There was a bunch of incredible females. And I remember thinking to myself, I am not ready for a round like this, but I felt very grateful to be a part of that revival round so early on. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, there was something special about the sitting on the pew and
totally.
Tin roof, and it was just like a culture. And early Whiskey Jam started there too. I mean, that whole like era of like 2010s Nashville comes out of that building.
Mm-hmm.
You
totally.
Know, you got to be here for all that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I moved here in 2015, and so I really got to be a part of, you know, seeing all of those amazing songwriters, singers just do their thing. And I really do like, I learned a lot from those people, you know, just how to be a songwriter and do the songwriter rounds. And, you know, just, I was in awe of them. They were just amazing. And, you know, I learned a lot from those people. They were incredible.
Yeah. I think it's super cool too. And it was awesome last night when you were playing the event, like one of the artists that we love in town, Shelby Ray, like was so enamored by you that she went up and was videotaping videos of you playing, you know? So it's like, it's so cool to see that, you know, she's, younger, got to town a little bit more recently, but it's cool to kind of see all of that go full circle where people are like looking up to your songs and the way that your voice penetrates a room.
It was pretty like, I mean, I never go into a room and like think that like I'm a veteran or that I'm like, you know, the best of the best. I just go in and just do what I love. And so, you know, to get to connect with up and coming artists is just amazing because I mean, you know, I love writing with everyone and anyone. So to be able to just connect with people again and start, you know, getting in the writers' rooms with like fresh faces is always really exciting.
Yeah. What do you think it was about that era that you came up in town and that first stint that you were living here that was so special? Like, take us back to BC before COVID, Nashville.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
That's what I always call it. People always laugh whenever I say, yeah, because I moved here in 2018.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, it was revival was still very much in its heyday, and I remember seeing it. It kind of transitioned over to like a lot of the Americana stuff. It was when like Ben Chapman and the Tyler Halversons and the Meg McCrees and the Harper O'Neils were getting going. And it was like the tail end of like the Luke Combs. He did play the first revival I went to. It was when they were celebrating She Got the Best of Me.
Oh my gosh.
And it was, they called it the 300 pounders round. It was Luke, Channing, and Rob all sitting on the pew together, and they were joking that the pew was gonna break.
Well,
but what was it that was so special? Like the time that you moved here, as Nashville was just booming, it still is, but seems like it was a special time to move here.
Well, I remember having a conversation with Channing, and he was saying, you know, so what do you listen to? And I was like, well, you know, I don't really listen to like much that's on radio right now. I kind of just listen to, like, you know, underground, like Jason Isbell. And and he's like, we're immediately like going to be friends, is what he said to me. And I think it's, you know, a lot of those people really didn't care what was trending on radio at the time. Mm-hmm. They were just doing what they were doing and just being who they were. And I think that that's what made it really special, was that they just didn't give an F what anybody thought or said, and they were just doing what they were doing. And,
Pure authenticity.
And that's really what translated, I think, you know, because, yeah, they weren't trying to chase anything.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I always hear people talking about, like, what's happening right now. I'm like, if you're trying to do write songs for what's happening right now, you're a year behind.
100%. And that's what everybody says, too, just, like, behind the scenes, is that if you're chasing what is, like, happening, what's going viral right now, then you're, like, in the wrong spot.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a important thing for young artists or songwriters in general. Just do what feels authentically you, and just whatever is how you want to express it. I think the right song can change the lane and make what you're doing the center lane.
Oh, 100%. You know, because like when I moved in here in 2015, I really wanted to figure out who I was as an artist and what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just wrote with a ton of people and just figured it out. And, you know, I grew up in a really small town, really rural. My grandpa was a buffalo farmer. And it's just, you know, I grew up super country. I always say that my grandpa should have been born in Texas, because he wears, like, you know, a 10-gallon hat and a belt buckle that's bigger than his waist.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, I grew up really loving country music. He, you know, played me Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton and Patsy Cline and all of those good old stuff. And he taught me how to yodel when I was 9 years old. So, you know, I really thought that, you know, figuring out, like, my sound and being true to who I was and being true to my roots was really important.
Yeah.
And I worked with people who tried to sway me, you know, to be a little bit more pop, a little bit more just not who I was. And I figured that out along the way, that if you are not who you are, it's not going to translate to the fans.
No, I think that's 100% it. It's like, what version of yourself do you want to be? But it has to be you.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
So I always say, I'm like, if you imagine a knob and you in your normal day-to-day life is like you at like a 6 or a 7, you have to crank that version up, right? So it's like, it's not like it's not you. It's just like an like a more outward, boisterous version of you.
Exactly. You know? More of a personality. Like, yes. You just got to absolutely crank it up and people will really attract to it. Like, there are songs that I play that are definitely super on brand and very, like, true to who I am, that, like, I play in my show, and I could just tell that people connect with that. And then if it's something that, like, you know, isn't quite, you know, it's still on brand but not quite there, I can tell, like, when the crowd isn't, you know, feeling it as much. So it totally translates.
I think that's a big part of it too, is kind of like throwing things out into the world, playing them at a live show, and seeing what the crowd interacts with.
Oh, 100%. Like, even last night, you know, because I just got off tour like 2 days ago, and I came to the round, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to play like some of my old songs that are 100% like true to me. And it's just, it always resonates. It never not resonates, you know? And it's just really cool to see that, you know, it doesn't matter how old the song is, it's, as long as it's true to who I am, people are going to connect with it.
Yeah, and you're one of those people that could sing the phone book and people would love it. You've got great freaking voice. But talking about kind of this new era that we're in, we're back in Nashville now, and you got Smoking Gun that came out. You had the record come out last year. Talk about what it's been like getting back down here and getting the new music out.
You know, the goal has always been to come back to Nashville. We had to leave. I had to leave because my visa was expiring.
Yeah.
And my publishing deal I still had, but the draw got taken, and so I had to keep writing for the company that I was at, but I wasn't getting paid, but so I couldn't afford to live in Nashville.
Yeah.
Right. And so I had to go back to Canada and then figure it out, and my lawyer was like, okay, we'll apply for a green card, but it's going to take 16 or 18 months. And so I was like, well, that's not too bad, you know, COVID will probably be just ending by then, but you know, COVID backed everything up at immigration. Oh, yeah. And so it took 5 years to get my green card.
It's It's crazy.
And so at like the 18 months, I kind of like had this, you know, realization that, oh my goodness, you know, I just got to start doing it now up here in Canada. And so I went back through the archive of songs that I just loved, that I knew that were true to me. So songs that I had written with Channing and just some other really great songwriters that I love, Mark Chandler, Davis Corley, just true songwriters. And so I put them together and worked with a producer up there and, you know, really pushed the record, got my first top 20 at Canadian Country Radio as an independent. Thank you. Yeah. Which was really exciting. Yeah. And then after that, we got news that we were going to be getting our green card. And then we got told that it was being held for extra processing time, which was a little bit of a bummer. And so then a year later, we ended up getting it and moving down immediately. So it's been a wild ride. But, you know, Smoking Gun just came out, you know, just releasing. That song's actually, I wrote that with Tom O'Connor. 10 years ago.
Oh, we know Tom very well.
He's great. Like, you know, we used to write really great songs together. And I've played that song at every damn show that I've played since writing that song. And it just translates so well, like, to the crowd. And it's just a fun one. It's a little bit of a shit kicker. So, you know, I love adding those because I'm a little bit feisty once you get to know me. And so I just loved adding that song. And I was so grateful that we got to produce it and release it. And so there's going to be more music coming out next year. It's just, yeah, been in the studio and just recording and releasing music nonstop.
That's the best. And I know you talked about just getting off tour. So you were out with the James Barker band.
Yeah. You guys know them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then we had, we got to have that dinner with you guys.
Yes. Right. In California. Yes. Yes. In Napa Valley. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yep. I forgot that we had that dinner. Yeah.
Yep.
They are great guys. Yeah. They were so sweet and so nice to be on the road with, and yeah, it was a fun tour to be a part of for sure.
Yeah, and it's like it's obviously it sucked that you couldn't be down here and you had the delays, but in the past 5 years, Canadian country has grown a huge amount. So at the same time, it's like the touring opportunities and being up there, it's like being marketed as a Canadian country artist, you would have had to go back up there anyway for shows, right?
For sure. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. No, it was really good to kind of build it a little bit more up in Canada and then come down here, because it's, you know, I would have had to do that, like you said, anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about that, and it's honestly like it almost feels like the Texas scene, where people from Texas are so extremely supportive of Texas artists. And I feel like Canadian artists, even when you move to the United States and aren't there all the time, are still, the fans are just extremely supportive of the Canadian artists.
Oh, 100%. You know, it's really interesting. There's even, like, I've played rounds down here in Nashville where there will be American fans that come up to the CCMAs every year and they, like, love the Canadian artists. But yeah, you know what? Canada is super supportive of their Canadian artists. The tour was really great. I'd never played this one town, London, Ontario, before on this tour with JBB. And they were singing so many of my songs, and I'm like, I've never even played here. How do you guys know my songs? You know, it was a really cool, fun experience. So they're cool. Definitely supportive. And I definitely, you know, I definitely have a lot of respect for Texas artists as well.
Yeah.
Kylie Rae, do you guys remember her?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was a fangirl of her. Like, you know, she was on the female round at Revival that I played, and I was just like, oh my gosh, she's incredible. But so many Texas artists are incredible as well, and you can tell, like, when people are like, oh, they're a Texas artist, you know, like, they have that air about them or something. You know, and I feel like Canadians do as well. You know, it's like the Canadian invasion is what they're calling it or something.
Particularly in the style that you're in, where it's in that more that traditional type of thing,
the Texas artist.
Well I'm saying in Canada too, like, you look at like the Jade Eaglesons of the world, and it's, but also like the more mainstream folks, like your Josh Rosses, your Owen Riglings, your Robin Ottolini's, you know, like, there's different lanes of Canadian country, just like there's different lanes in here in Nashville and in Texas.
Oh totally. You know, Jade Eagleson, like that one song She Don't Know, and I know Jonathan Singleton wrote that song, and it's like, I knew that was a Jonathan Singleton song because it's just so good, and I'm such a fan of his. But yeah, that's a great song. I love Jade Eagleson. He's true country for sure.
Me too. It's cool too, like you're talking about with like Singleton, you can kind of hear it in a song.
Oh totally, you know? Yeah.
Like the new Luke Combs song, what is it? Any Given Saturday Night.
Any Given Saturday Night, yeah.
Yeah, and you could just hear Jay in it. You know?
I haven't heard it yet, so now I'm going to have to go and listen to it after this.
It's a banger.
Oh, like,
it's
of course
just
it is.
It's just like a Jay, like, it hits like Beer Never Broke My Heart. Is Jay on back in the Saddle, too?
I'm not sure.
I feel like he might
be.
I might have to look that up. But like, you could just tell like when it's like a cold beer, country drinking kind of song.
Totally.
Like
some of the melodies too. Yeah, you know, you can hear the cadence that even sometimes like when you can hear it a little bit. Like I say that with like Hardy too. Like when Hardy doesn't sing a song, but it was wrote by Hardy, you can kind of still hear the Hardy in it.
For even sure. If
you didn't know before you listened to it.
Well, like the one that he wrote for Blake Shelton. Exactly. That, like that's totally, you can hear
God's
that, right?
Country. Yeah, yeah. You just hear Michael Hardy just yelling. And, and you were and you were here when he was coming up too as a writer, like in that same type of world.
And you know what? I totally was, but I'd never seen him, which I'm kind of bummed about. But yeah, I definitely was. I remember people talking about Hardy, but I hadn't never seen him at around before. And then all of a sudden I'm up in Canada and he's just like everywhere. And I was like, what is going on? I've heard of this guy before, you know?
Yeah, because Nashville's funny where it's like, and it's like this today too, where there's different crews doing different things that hang out at different rounds or hang out at different bars.
Yep. Totally. Yeah, it's really true. Like you, there was, I mean, I don't know the one round that, I can't remember his name now. Of course I can't. But yeah, it's so true. Different rounds have different artists doing different things. And it's wild how we all have our own little kind of hangouts and our own little styles.
Because it was like Revival back then. It was Why Not Wednesday. Yeah. It was Threesome Thursdays. It was Whiskey Jam, obviously. Yeah. And it's like you had like a different crew. And a lot of the people, there was a lot of crossover with Whiskey Jam, Revival, and Why Not. And, and Threesome Thursdays with those four. But you'd have different people hanging out at different things.
Who did the Threesome Thursdays? I was never
That was Randy McFadden.
Oh, okay.
And that was, I believe, at the Poorhouse. That was where they had to buy one, get one bottle of wines.
Oh. Okay.
So, like, Ryan Nelson talks about that one. Ryan Nelson and Jordan Fletcher have a lot of stories from back in the day.
Gotcha.
Well, that one didn't last quite as long. You know what I mean? You know how it goes sometimes the entire
time. It's hard to keep an event going. I mean, I've been doing mine that you played last time. We've been doing that for 6 years.
That is wild.
That's a long time.
I wonder how you guys do that. Like, that's got to be stressful finding songwriters that are available, and you're doing, like, you know, three rounds, right? Or four?
It was four last night.
That's wild.
It's honestly, there's so many people here and there's so much talent.
That's true.
It's easier than you would think, specifically with the number that we're at right now.
Yeah, we were at 10.
It was wild.
We were at 10 events a month there for a minute.
My just because
we were trying to be able to pay rent and you don't get paid much to do anything here.
Right.
But honestly, it's just such a blessing too. Like, one of the things that we talk about, and I mean, honestly, like A&R people and like managers will come and like pick our brains on stuff of like what's happening or like who are people showing up for. That's part of it too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just who's really good, but like when someone plays, like who is the scene showing up for?
For sure. You know,
who's like the town showing up for?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's really
totally
interesting.
No kidding. Yeah. You guys probably have like an interesting perspective on that.
It is. It's super cool. It's definitely different. It's, you know, you see who shuts the room up.
Right.
You know, and I'll tell you this too. It's last night, a guy that's a veteran songwriter, he was playing over at, what's that supper club that's like next door to the local. And he came over and he asked me for your name because he was such a big fan. He's like, she's so good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's just cool to see stuff like that. Like, I mean, he was probably 65, you know what I mean? But he was like, man, she's so good. I got to look her up.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for telling me that.
Of course.
Oh, that was so nice.
It's that's one of the coolest parts is when you're there and maybe the room's a little noisy and then the song shuts it down, you know, and everybody pays attention.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Just take the room with a song or a voice. Like, that's another thing I say about you vocally. Like, your voice is so distinct.
Thanks. Thank you.
Like, when you're singing, I know exactly who it is. And if someone doesn't know exactly who it is, as soon as they learn your name, they'll know that it's you because you have a specific tone and specific, like, distinctness in your voice sonically that I love and I think other people do too. And
well,
if they don't
you.
Yet, hopefully they will when they listen to it.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. I always take that as such a compliment. I remember being at a Revival round, and I remember chanting it. I can't remember who else was on stage, but he got up there and he sang The Blues Coming On, that song.
Oh, yeah.
Every time, people just shut the hell up and listen to what he's saying, and it's just, it gives you shivers. You know, it kind of like goes deep into your soul when he sings that song. And I think, like, as an artist and a songwriter, that's really like the biggest compliment that you can get, is when you shut a really noisy room up, right? Yes. Because it's just like, holy crap, who's that, you know? And that was I was like, well, I remember when I saw that, I'll never forget it, because it was just like, holy, he's amazing.
Yeah, Revival was like a home for songs that, and there were like songs within it where it's like you could go back and make like a like compilation records of some of those songs that were coming out in that era. Like, think of like Nate Frederick's The Dreamer back in the day, or Ryan Nelson's The Way My Heart Breaks. Like, that was like that 2018, 2019 era, but... You meet, and you also meet so many people, like all the people that you've written songs with that I'm sure you met, even when you weren't playing, you were just hanging out there.
Well, I just even remember like being put on rounds with people that I'd never met before. So like Riley Green was somebody that I was playing around with. It, like, it was just me and him on the pew. And I and then, you know, I'm up in Canada and he's just Riley Green's exploding all over the place. And I'm just like, this is crazy. Like, you know, it's just so cool who you just never know who you're going to be sitting beside that's going to blow up in the next however many years, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's
cool.
It's interesting to see everyone's journey, but I mean, no one's journey is ever the same, right? Everyone's journey is so different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things too, you got to build a family when you were back in Canada.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's probably cool to get to do that there as opposed to having to try to figure a whole thing out here too, you know?
You know, I honestly never thought that I was going to be a mom because of music, right? It just, you kind of, this got this stigma around it that it's like, you know, if once you become a mom, you won't be able to continue being an artist anyways. Like a songwriter, sure, possibly, but definitely not an artist. And I think, you know, that was the one thing that I was really scared about when I got pregnant with my son, that, you know, I was really excited and very grateful. And but I was like, oh, my gosh, my career is over. I'm up in Canada. I can't even do anything about it now. And, you know, I was on like a publishing and a label company here down in Nashville before I went up back to Canada. And I had more success becoming a mom, you know, than I did. After becoming a mom than I did before becoming a mom. And so that was you know, I think I just had to prove that to myself, and I was able to do that, and then I signed a major record deal up there in Canada. And that was, so my second son was born June 4th, and I got offered my record deal on June 6th.
Wow.
Which was wild. So crazy. They say babies bring blessings, and it's definitely true in my case for sure. Obviously more than themselves, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that was something that I had to figure out and realize that, you know, the only one who's going to tell me no is me. And luckily we have a really supportive family that like take our kids whenever we need, you know, so that helps too.
Support system is definitely a big part of it. You know, whether that's a record label being a good partner for you, publishing company, managers, or family, of course, is the biggest one.
Oh my gosh.
Most fundamental.
It's so funny that you're saying this, because I was thinking about this today, literally today on the drive over here. I was thinking, you know, I just gotten off a call with my record label, and, you know, one of my goals in, like, you know, since I started doing music was to really find a team of good humans to their core. And, you know, I finally found that. You know, I think the universe was kind of like, you know, because I kept on saying that in my mantra, the universe was just like, hold up, you know, we just got to move the right people in together to get, you know, all the good people. And, you know, I'm really grateful to say that I have that now. And it's just incredible what a difference that makes in your life, you know?
100%. I mean, all the energy that gets put out around you is absorbed, you know, whether you realize it or not. So if it's a lot of positive people and, you know, people all locking arms and pushing forward together, that's so important.
Yeah, you know? It's so true. It's like, you know, it really is the most important, you know. It
takes a village.
It does. It truly 100%. Does. To raise kids, to have a music career, to do all the things,
all of
for
it.
Sure. To do a podcast, I'm sure, for you guys, right?
Yeah. We have a small village, but a village nonetheless.
It gets it done.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but that's really the thing that you look for in life, right? It's finding your people.
Oh, yeah.
So in the music world, is no different.
Oh, totally.
Finding the right people, the people that believe in you like you believe in yourself.
And even more so some days, because they've got to pick you up when you're feeling down about yourself. Because as artists, you know, we're very like down on ourselves and, you know, have a hard time a lot of the time. So you need people to kind of give you a kick in the ass and say, you know, get it together. You're fine. Like, you know.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's part of it, too. I always say, like, life in general is a roller coaster.
Yes.
But this music, thing, entertainment is a very big roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
I'm glad you agree, because I'm like, is it just me that thinks
it's a real thing. I like to look at it like racehorses. They put the blinders on them, mm-hmm. and they keep them focused. You need people to kind of help you keep your blinders on and keep you focused and not looking at, oh, he's doing this or she's doing that. Totally. Like, you got to be the best version of Kelsey that you can be, and you need the right guys and girls in your corner to do that.
Oh, 100%. And I was thinking about that again this morning. I was thinking, you know, comparison to like other artists is like the thief of your joy. It's the thief of your success. It's the thief of pretty much everything. So all you have to do is just worry about what you're doing and focus on what you're doing. And, you know, it's not going to matter what anybody else is doing, because we're all on our own journeys anyways. We should just say, you know, congrats, good job. And, you know, march forward and just, you know, focus on what you're doing.
Yeah, you can identify with another artist, but comparing yourself to them is a different thing.
100%.
They taught me that in AA. You got to identify, not compare, you
right,
know?
Totally.
That's a big thing.
That's one of the other things, too, that I always say. Like, man, like some of these kids, literal kids, they're 21 or 22. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how is it not working for me yet? And I'm like, if you only knew the amount of time you have to make this thing successful, and the amount of things you have to learn in your life to be able to get to where you can really even push fully, you know?
Totally. And like, I find at 21, 22 years old, like, you don't know who you are at all.
You're not ready.
No. Yeah. Oh, you're definitely not ready, for sure. You know, you think about, like, I think about just to like when I was 21 and I'm like, oh, I was so immature and I didn't have anything figured out, you know, like I didn't start figuring out until I was like 25, 26, you know, mm-hmm. and that's kind of when you start like figuring out who you are as a person, and then you can relay that to the world and connect with other people, right?
Yeah. I think that's so important too, is everyone, and I was talking to a female artist who's 21, and I said, all right, line up for me 10 people that are your age and are females in this genre that you would rather have their career than yours.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a very hard time doing that. And I was
right.
like, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're comparing yourself to a one-off person, or you're comparing yourself to people that are 7 years deeper in the business than you are.
Mm-hmm.
Those are hard things to compare to. You
also,
know?
Well, so true. And also, too, you don't know anybody else's like 100% situation. You don't know what they're going through, because like they could look like all butterflies and rainbows on the outside, but on the inside, they're dealing with, you know, X, Y, and Z, and it's just complete turmoil.
Yeah.
So you really just you don't want anybody else's situation, because you just never know what goes on behind closed doors.
100%. And that's like, I mean, the things that make you are all of the things that have happened. Part of that is the turmoil of having to go back to Canada when you thought you were going to be here for longer.
Yes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Part of that is the what we've all struggled with of COVID and the life-changing things that that did to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I mean, that's part of the journey. That's
mm-hmm.
part of what makes you able to write great songs and sing them with the ability that you have to express that to people.
Oh, 100%. I also think that like going through cancer and chemotherapy and all that stuff was something that really made me, you know, just kind of understand myself and my life and people a little bit more. And it really, you know, it was a shitty situation, but also like I always say, it was like the best thing that ever happened to me, because it really kind of changed my perspective on life, and it made me realize that, hey, I do want to follow my dreams, and I do want to do music and write music that connects with people and makes them feel like they're not alone in whatever situation they're going through in life. So you know, all of your struggles make you stronger.
100%. If it doesn't break you, it makes you stronger.
Exactly.
Yeah,
totally.
So I think that's so important. And yeah, it's the hardships are what makes it relatable to other people too. You
mm-hmm.
know, if your life is just golden, no one's is.
Exactly. People are like, get out of here. Like, show me some, you know, tragedy or something, you know,
yeah.
I totally agree with that. And, I think that's probably like a struggle that, as an artist, you kind of look, how do I connect with people that isn't, you know, just showing them like my music, like how, like, you know, 'cause I feel like we're constantly like shoving our music down people's throats.
Yeah.
And how do I connect with like the people that listen to my music, the fans, on like just an everyday like way, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And so I think that like, you know, the whole mom thing, people really appreciate.
Yeah.
And the mom thing, it's a big thing, but you know, and just like sharing a little bit more of that, like the struggles, you know, like this last week I brought my sons up with me on tour, and I was driving, you know, the one show was I left him at Eric's my husband's parents' place. Mm-hmm. So they'd be there during the day, and then I'd play the shows, and then I'd drive back at night. And the furthest that I drove was like 5 hours one way to the show, and then mm-hmm. played the show, hung around a little bit for JBB, then drove all the way back through like moose territory. And I'm just like, putting Red Bull in my veins to make sure that my eyes are peeled back to make sure that I make it there.
Yeah. But it's just touring in Canada is a whole different animal too, because you guys are so spread out. I've talked with Josh Ross and some other people with that, where it's like you might have one gig on the East Coast and then have to work your way all the way out west. Like,
oh my gosh.
We have it easy down here with touring, where everything's like a few hours apart from each other. But some of those shows have some stretches to them.
Oh my goodness. And also too, like, it's like the routing like also isn't always the best, right?
No.
Like sometimes you will literally be playing, like last year I was playing on literally the furthest side of Canada on the east side, and then I went to Alberta, which is the second last province on the west. Yep. You know what I mean?
And
it's just, it really is, you know. And I mean, luckily the JBB dates were like condensed, except for I was playing in St. John and then I was playing in Montreal, so that was a little bit of a like, and then
stretch.
Ontario, right? And then I was on tour with Nico Moon earlier this year, and that was all over the place. And it's like you have to take a plane ride to get to any of these dates, because
crazy.
It's just, you wouldn't, if you drove, you wouldn't make it to your sound check in time. You know, it's just,
it's nuts.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's the other thing people like don't understand about the music business is when you pop up in their city, that's the time they get to see you. They don't understand what it took to get there in a timely manner, how long you've been on site to get your sound check in before everything happens. You know?
Or like what goes on right before you go on stage. You know, like you have like all of your equipment that's like hooked up to, you know, your in-ears rack, and making sure that your cues and your click are in your ears.
Yeah.
Like, so there was a show that I played last year. It was a Country Thunder show. And right before I went on stage, nothing was working. And I was like, I'm going to have a heart attack right now because I'm supposed to go on in literally 30 seconds. And like, I don't know what happened. Like my drummer came over to help like the other guy that was working the instrument, like the equipment. And he like, you know, figured something out. And then it was like, we were on. Like right then, and I was like and so like it took me like probably 10 minutes to calm down while I'm singing, because I was like, I didn't think that we were gonna, the show was gonna happen, because it was like
crazy.
You know, oh, stressful.
So
yeah,
so stressful.
Yeah, you have to just put on a smile and pretend like that didn't happen, you know.
Oh yeah, because I mean, that's the thing, like music and entertainment in general, right? People are using it to get away from their chaos.
Yes.
They don't realize that the chaos is happening to you to get
that
done.
Oh my gosh. No, it's like literally like I always joke around like with Eric that this is just, we are just the hot mess express all the time. It's like, you know, if it's not the equipment, it's like the travel getting there, or, you know, the babies, like, you know, we're shooting like music videos and my kids are screaming 2 feet over there because they want me while I'm performing like music videos. You know what I mean? It's if we had like a fly on the wall and the fly had a camera, people would be like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
I think it's so telling though. I mean, realistically, like I got to work at a record label for like a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that you find out is like, no one really knows exactly what they're doing.
Right.
It's just, you do enough reps where you're like, okay, it's probably somewhere in this wheelhouse. You know? But it's smart people working hard together and trying to solve problems.
Oh,
you know?
Totally. And like,
same thing being on tour.
And also when you think like, you know, like, cause basically like Eric and I were my own record label over the last, before I signed with Universal Music Canada. It was, you know, we just were like, okay, how do I build more fans? Like, how do I grow my socials? How do I grow like my YouTube? And we just kind of threw all the shit up against the wall and, you know, figured out what stuck and then just kept on trying to do that, you know?
Yep.
And we literally had no idea what we were doing, but it worked, you know? It was just try and try again and don't give up until, you know, it works, you know? So I don't know. There's really nobody knows what they're doing, you know?
And if you did know, the algorithm would change in 3 months and you wouldn't know anyway.
Totally.
You know?
Yes. 100%. Yeah, it changes so much quicker than it used to.
Oh my gosh.
The things that I think seemed to always shine through is like what we talked about with authenticity, mm-hmm. right? Like you got to be you.
Mm-hmm.
And then like what portion of you are you willing to share with your audience? Because you, like you said, like they love seeing you be a mom,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's a part of it.
Yeah.
Is like, are you willing to share that with people? Because that's something they can relate to.
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah. And also too, like there's like the side where I've been away from my second son way more than I was ever away from my first son because it was COVID. So there was no shows anyways up in Canada.
Right.
And so like he was born and 3 weeks later, I played my first show and I had to be away from him for the day. And then it was like a month later and I had to be away from him for a week. And so, you know, and like all of that, the things that like I go through me and then he goes through, it's just like a really, crazy. There's a lot of emotions behind it as well, you know? Yeah. So it is what are you willing to share? I don't like to be vulnerable. So I'm still kind of working through that process.
Yeah.
You know, I share sometimes, but I probably could share a lot more of the struggles.
Yeah.
And it would probably relate well to other people. But yeah, it is, you really have to be okay with being vulnerable, and I'm okay with being vulnerable in my music. And that's why I like write the songs that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But like being personally vulnerable to somebody is a lot harder for me.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. It's a different level, like almost like songwriting feels like therapy, right?
100%.
But in therapy, you have one person you're talking to,
mm-hmm.
and in songwriting, you're now sending that to everyone that can hear it.
Right? Yeah.
But in your daily life, that is something that you're now comfortable with. You've been doing for a long time, mm-hmm. writing songs and getting that out in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is, you don't know who's going to see it.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, you have no idea.
Uh-huh.
Is it someone that you know, someone that you don't know, probably more likely often, but
right.
It just depends. And so I think that's a big part of it. Like we've even struggled, like I'd say with us, it's like, how much do we want to put ourselves on social media?
Right.
Like what do we think that we have that is a valuable asset to give to fans or to consumers that love country music?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what makes me think that I'm an expert on any of that?
Right. Exactly. You know? There's that behind it as well. Yeah. Right. You know, you
it's
just want to come off like not like people. You don't want people to think that you have an ego because you don't.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just, you know, I think I found my favorite thing that I get from people is when like they make like, you send me like a private message and they say, hey, you know, like this song has really gotten me through this hard time. And they like go into like a really deep story about it. And it's just like that. That's the best part of it all, you know, and that kind of makes you want to be more vulnerable because then, you know, like, you know, once I figured out when I was 17, when I was going through chemo, that's when I would write all of my like songs. Because it was a form of therapy, because I couldn't tell anybody how I was feeling on the inside. I couldn't tell my family. I just, because I would have cried, right? And so the only way that I could have gotten that out and off of my chest was through song. And then when I would go and sing these songs out to people, and people would come up to me and be like, you know, I've gone through cancer and I've always felt that way, but I never knew how to say it. But that song said it perfectly for me. That was the like my aha moment where I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like I want to write music and sing music that like helps people feel like not alone in whatever they're going through.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being vulnerable through song is like the easiest way to do that as an artist. But I do think it's important that like, you know, we do it in other ways as well. It's just figuring out how to do that in like a tasteful way that I find it's tasteful, you know?
Right.
100%. No, that's important. Now, what are we looking at for next year? So you got, when did you make the move back here?
June.
So June. So we're coming up on about the six month mark of being back here. What are we looking at for 2026?
So 2026, we just got off a call for that. So a lot more music. We've got an EP coming out, a single coming out in January, an EP coming out in March.
Let's go.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. Obviously more song, writing more songs, and then another EP coming out in the fall as
awesome.
Well. So it's just going to be a ton more music, a ton more shows.
Yeah.
I'm playing C2C in Berlin next year. So I'm really excited for that. And just, a ton more songs and a ton more shows.
I love it.
Yeah. Me too. Well,
we're happy to have you back here.
Oh, thanks. I'm happy to be back.
Anytime you want to play, anytime, whatever, within our Raise Rowdy universe, we'd love to have you. Seriously,
thank you.
It's a real treat. And like Nick said with Shelby yesterday, like, or with Shelby last night, it was so cool watching the up-and-comers like get a look at you who's been doing it for a while and that appreciation, because they weren't there when you were playing Revival back in the day. You were playing the rounds, and it's cool for you to get to see the folks that are on the up-and-up, you know?
100%.
Like, so seriously, welcome back to Nashville. We love having you here.
Thank you guys for having me, and thanks for letting me be a part of today and last night as well.
Of course, anytime, seriously.
It's been a blessing.
Thank you.
As I said, longtime fan, super happy to have you guys back here.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, guys, thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you follow Kalsey on social media if you want to shout out your handles.
Yeah, it's just KalseyKulyk. I'm the only one out there. Really easy to find.
And thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Nikki T.
I'm Matt Burrell.
And we'll see you in the front row.